Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
So, hello, and welcome to the latest episode of our podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rental sector. In this episode, I'm absolutely thrilled to be joined by the famous Sally Lawson, who is obviously a very well-known name in lettings and our industry. As well as being the former president of Arla and now a best-selling author, Sally is also an expert in optimising businesses, especially letting agencies. She's the founder of Agent Rainmaker, a marketing and growth agency, and having attended the most recent national event last year, the Rainmaker Conference is definitely one of the most uplifting and inspirational events in the lettings calendar. Our research has told us that it all started back in 1987 when you purchased your first rental property at the age of 18. So let's get started. Sally, thank you so much for joining me today. If you could introduce yourself and tell our listeners a little bit more about you, your business and your journey to this point, that would be brilliant.
Well, hello, Heidi, and everyone that's listening. Thank you so much for having me here. This is so exciting to be coming and sharing loads of top tips and valuable knowledge all around the lettings industry. My name is Sally Lawson. I've been in the industry 32 years, which seems really scary, actually, when you think about it. It's like three lifetimes. Started as a letting agent back in 1990, launched a franchise 2010, then went on to launch a training company in 2014 and been running Agent Rainmaker since 2017. So really have been through it all, not forgetting the little stint as Arla Property Mark president as well, which was great fun and got me to see really the whole of the UK market and to see some of the challenges that was so familiar to everybody. And that's really what sparked the idea for helping agents grow and develop the business side of their businesses. So yeah,
we are absolutely delighted. So let's get started with the questions, because I'm going to try and cram as much in as we can so our listeners can learn everything. So one of the reasons that we are so pleased to talk to you on the pod is that you talk incredibly passionately about outsourcing, which we know is something that our letting agency listeners always look at in their business and actually has become pretty commonplace in the lettings industry. It's also something which as a business leader can feel like quite a huge responsibility to get right, especially as it involves contracts and a time or money commitment. And in reality, picking the right supplier is just an extension of your own brand. So why would you say removing some of the tasks that can be completed by others is so important for a letting agent to consider?
Well, first of all, I wouldn't say it's so important to outsource. I would actually say it's essential. If you want to grow as a business owner, from my experience of running five different businesses, two letting agencies, one white label management hub, an ad agency and a training company, every single one of those businesses is a success because they focus on what they do well. Every single thing that you do has to have as much focus and attention as possibly can. And if you are distracted by focusing on other things, then what happens is your key thing that you're doing ends up suffering. So I'll give you a little example of this, Heidi. I can remember when we first started doing the training company and we had to run some ads. And I was thinking, yeah, Facebook, this is easy. I click the boost button and boost some ads. And, you know, I got a little bit more savvy and went in the back and did some campaigns and then went on YouTube and boosted a few videos. And I thought I was absolutely the bee's knees at Facebook ads and social media marketing. But actually, all that I did for the 5 years that I managed our Facebook ads and YouTube ads and Google ads was actually held the company back. Because when I got too busy, I thought, you know, I'm going to find somebody to pass this on to. And I found a guy who just did that. He did nothing else but just did that. And I passed it over to him and our leads 10x'd. And all of a sudden, I realized that for years, I had been the bottleneck and I had held the business back. And since then, I've always had this mantra that your key thing to do as a business owner is to hire the best person, company, software, tech, whatever it is, to get the best in the industry at that thing to allow you to be the best at your thing. And that's been a real transformation for all of my businesses in that we hire people to do pretty much everything. Anything that is super niche, super complex, something that is really high level, outsource it to the best people you can in the industry. Because I give you an example. one of the things I say to letting agents is you shouldn't be doing your own ads. You shouldn't be doing, you know, all these sort of things. And one of the things we outsource, for example, is we outsource our YouTube channel. So our YouTube channel, we want to get the best amount of clicks. We want to get the best amount of views. We want to get the best amount of subscriptions, optimize everything possible. Now, I'm not a YouTube expert. I'm a letting agency optimization expert. That's what I do. I'm not a YouTube expert. I don't spend all day in the back end of YouTube optimizing, squeezing. I just have no idea what I'd be doing there. So we've got two choices at this point. We can either hire someone and employ someone and bring them into the office. And what I hear a lot of business owners say is, oh, just hire an 18-year-old. They all know how to do it. Well, they don't, you know, they don't know how to do it. They might know how to make a video, but is it the right video? Is it the et cetera, et cetera? So you can hire someone, but then what happens then is when you hire someone, you are managing that person and training that person. So the limit of their level of expertise is going to be your level of expertise. Alternatively, and let's say that costs you, I know, minimum wage, £1,500, £2,000 a month. Alternatively, you can go and find one of the best in the industry, which we've got, one of the top UK experts in the UK, and he spends a couple of hours on our YouTube channel a month. That's it. And we pay him £800 a month. But that £800 a month, he does so much more on our YouTube channel than, no offence to an 18-year-old that knows a bit about YouTube, would be able to do in an entire month, because he has all that experience and knowledge of 100% YouTube focus. So I think it's not only the benefit of outsourcing is us being focused on our core thing. It's finding like A players, superstars that are brilliant at their thing, so that you've got someone brilliant at their thing helping you with your thing, so you can focus on what you're awesome at. But also it saves money. £800 is much cheaper to me than £1,500 for an employee. It's also less time responsive because I don't have to train him. I don't have to manage him. I don't have to monitor him. I have to look in the accounts and make sure he's doing what he should be doing occasionally. But it's much less time resources required, much less money resources required. And I've actually got someone who's the best in the industry. And I think sometimes we miss that, Heidi. We think, oh, I'll just get an MVQ in. I'll get a member of staff and I'll get Mary in accounts to do it or whatever. But is that the best solution? And I think having gone through that process over and over and over again with so many different tasks, to me, it's a win-win. You really just cannot fail by outsourcing. You might have to, you know, as I say, kiss a few frogs. You might have a bad supplier, try another one, bad supplier, try another one. But, you know, a great partnership is made up of two-way players, focus on the things they're great at, bring those together. And honestly, it's fireworks. It's amazing. So
I think as well, we can all get sucked into, can't we, like the low value task, thinking that we're doing a good job because we can tick loads of stuff off our to-do list and feel quite rewarded by that and the fact that we're achieving things. But actually, we're not really, because actually we're doing the things that are not really adding the value at all. How as people then do we recognise, I suppose, our blind spots, like the things we're actually not good at? Because it's identifying that allows you to work out what you really need to kind of get off your to-do list and definitely give to somebody else.
Well, that's a really great question. I was talking to a lady yesterday actually, and she was a director of a letting agency business. You know, there's six directors in this business, so it's a big business. And before we met, she was spending her time sorting out stuff in letting agency. You know, Heidi, as much as I do, the stuff, and the listeners will know, the stuff you can get dragged into in a letting agency. You know, there's a fire over here, there's a deposit return over there, the keys are gone missing over here, whatever that stuff is. You know, the £10 an hour task, you know, doing the actions on the board, ordering gas certs, maybe dropping keys off, sorting out the key room. The list is endless that letting agencies can get absolutely consumed in. And this lady, who was a director, large companies, large scale director, was getting roped into this stuff and doing this stuff on a day-to-day basis. And she'd been a director for about 6-7 years. But here's the thing, she didn't know any different. She didn't know that actually there was this task over here and that task over there and this task over there that could add £100,000, £50,000, £200,000, an additional income stream, completely transform the business. She didn't know that these tasks were over here. And so what happens was she was just doing what she's always done, but in a more supervisory role, but also being a little bit on the tools. So I think the big challenge is we get stuck on the tools rather than doing the thing. And I think it's because, if I'm honest, we don't know what else we could be doing. And I think that's where education comes in. And one of the things I'm talking about all the time is find out how to make an extra 100K over there. Find out how to add that extra service. Find out what people are doing to grow the business, because I wish I had them with me, but I've got two hats, one that says letting agent and one that says business owner. And it doesn't matter whether you're a baker, a hairdresser, a letting agent, whatever you are. If you're a great baker or a great letting agent or a great hairdresser, that's fantastic. But actually what you need to be is a great business owner. And a great business owner will understand the dynamics of pounds per hour and understand that, you know, sorting out the gas certs, renewals, check-ins, check-outs, maintenance, all that's hugely valuable and essential to the business. But it's not a £250 an hour task. It's not a director's task. A director's task is to do something that will add revenue streams, will protect the business, will grow the business, will hire A players, will automate and systemize the business, make everything streamlined and run better. That's what a director's role is. And every time that you're spending time doing £10 an hour tasks, as we call them, you're not focusing on the big stuff. And let's be honest, Heidi, no one else is going to do that for you. You know, your neg isn't going to do that. Your lister isn't going to do that. It's got to be you that does those high value tasks, which means every minute you're spending on those tools, the big jobs aren't getting done. And that transformation, just to give you, to finish off the story, since actually making that change in literally 9 weeks, that lady has added nearly £200,000 to her business.
Amazing.
Making that mental shift and making that change and just focusing on the right things, you know. And the thing is, people say, you know, but Sally, I can't afford to hire anybody. They look at it as a cost. They say, well, I've got to do it because I can't afford an extra £2,000 a month. And I know it's a common saying, well, you can't afford not to. But if there's 200 grand sitting over here, you can't afford not to. It's just crazy. So I believe the answer is why they don't outsource and why they don't pass stuff on and why they're still doing the things they shouldn't be doing is because they don't know what else they could be doing with that time. And so they just do what they've always done. And, you know, I think it's time to, you know, explore more, learn more and see what else can be done with your business.
And I think as well, we probably don't underestimate as well what effect that has on our employees, because actually, if we're doing the real basic things all the time, it's not really giving them the right message to think big and step up. It's actually giving them the opposite message. But also, they probably look at us sometimes and think that we're not doing it very well. You know, they probably can do it better than us anyway. So it's not actually achieving anything in the end. And if I kind of just relate that then maybe to home life, because when we're kind of at home, we probably can see it a little bit more. You know, we might have a cleaner come in because, you know, we realise that either our time is more valuable than actually doing it ourselves. It doesn't, you know, it doesn't take an hour, it takes an amount of time. Or if we have a gardener in or a decorator in or somebody to do DIY or whatever, we kind of outsource all of that pretty easily. But when it comes to business, we don't always apply the same tactics. And that's either because we either can't see that it needs doing or that we think we can do it better, I suppose. What, I suppose, kind of quick tips would you give someone to say, how do they get started on that journey? What do they kind of immediately do this afternoon? They stop doing what it is that they've always done and they go and do something different to kind of transform into a kind of a different way of running their business.
Good question. I think the key thing here is that a lot of business owners don't understand what I call pounds per hour. So how much does it cost you to run your business? A quick, simple piece of maths here. Take the annual cost of running your business, divide that by 253 days, divide that by 8 hours in a day, and divide that by how many staff you've got. That will tell you how much every single staff member costs you per hour to sit in that seat. And it'll be somewhere between £20 and £100 per hour it costs you for that person to be in that seat. And then you've got to look at what you think you're saving. So a classic one here is inspections or inventories. Oh, I can't afford to outsource that. I do it myself because it's, and they use the word free. It doesn't cost me anything to do that inspection or to do that inventory or insert whatever it is that they're doing. They don't see it as a cost, but I would say actually it is. So if it takes somebody 1.5 hours to do that inspection, you've got to book the appointment, make the call, get out there, get your stuff, whatever you do, do it on whatever functionality you use, come back, update it, send it to the landlord, discuss any maintenance issues. Let's say 2 hours. And if you're on, say, an £85 an hour cost rate, what you've worked out your pounds per hour, and that's with no profit, that's just cost. So if it's costing you £85 an hour, it's actually cost you £170 to do that inspection. Now, if you've got someone down the road that can do it for £50, you're saving £120. And you say, well, yes, Sally, but I'm not really, am I? And then it comes back to what I said in the previous answer. Okay, so the question is, what could you do with those 2 hours? So if you've got those 2 hours free, you've saved yourself 120 already, so you're already up. But how many calls could you make to landlords in that time? How many prospecting calls could you make? How many marketing leads could you follow up? How many landlords could you serve? How many additional, how much training plans could you devise? What terms and conditions could you revise? What additional services could you build in that time? There's just so many things you can do with those 2 hours. And 2 hours, you could negotiate acquiring a competitor in that time. And it's just so valuable if you see your time as valuable. And I think the key here is understanding that pounds per hour and understanding that everything costs you. I'll give you another example. If you've got if you've worked out your hourly rate is £50, keep math simple, your £50 an hour rate is what it costs you, and you've got four members of staff having a chin wag for 15 minutes, that's four members of staff at 15 minutes equals an hour. That's just cost you £50. That chat has cost you £50. Yeah. And the second misunderstanding thing about the pounds per hour is that's not what you charge your time out at, because there's no profit on that. If you want to make 50% profit and your charge is £50 per hour, that's how much it costs you to run your business, you need to charge your hourly time out at £100. So a simple thing here, Heidi, is that to move a tenant into a property, it was some research done a few years ago, I think it was Arla that did the research, that it takes 17 hours of time to get a tenant moved into a property. Now, if it's costing you £50 an hour, that's costing you best part of £600-700 to move a tenant into a property, and yet you find people charging £150 and £200 and £250. You're not even covering costs. And it's because of that lack of understanding of pounds per hour, that lack of understanding of how much we need to charge as a business to make sure we're making profit. So I think the answer is, just like the cleaners at home, the garden, just for the record, I haven't done gardening or cleaning since I was in my 20s. COVID was a real shock when I had to do it myself. So I'm absolutely on board with that. But when it comes to letting agencies, you absolutely have to understand the pounds per hour, the cost, and the thing that you sell, which is time. We sell time. Every single hour that somebody is working in your business, you are selling their time to make a profit. So if you don't sell their time for more than it costs you, you're not going to be making any profit. That's simple maths. You can build an entire business plan, figure out how much profit you want to make and make it happen. So powerful stuff.
Going back to your comment on the 17 hours, that's absolutely true. And if I kind of relate that to us at the Lettings Hub, we've actually taken that 17 hours and we know we can help agents by reducing that down. But even when we talk to them, they can't quantify it always, because they say, yeah, but I'm going to use Wendy. Wendy's still going to have to do something. And it's really hard to say, yes, but Wendy could do so many other things that would be way more valuable to you than do this kind of process exactly as you do it. But people don't necessarily see it. So I think people don't value time, both their time and their employees' time. And, you know, that probably includes us too. I'm probably speaking for ourselves, because that was one of the things that I learned from the conference, is it's not just about letting agencies, any business can kind of take the messages away. Another thing that I picked up listening is people do undervalue, as you just kind of alluded to, their services and their time. And there was a guy that came on stage and he explained how he'd put the price up to his landlords because he hadn't made a change for a while, because he was embarrassed to, really, and he hadn't done it. But actually, he even got a thank you from one of his landlords, and actually, you know, I'm surprised you haven't done this sooner, because it was a very, you know, well-worded letter to his landlords explaining why. How often are you kind of coming across people that are kind of scared to make that move, of the fear of what might happen, and how they're, I suppose it's near enough like an emotional mental barrier, isn't it, in terms of like what people are worth and how they see that?
Yeah, well, the answer to that is every day, because that's what we do here. So we talk to people about how much money they can make and how much revenue they can add. And people just say, well, I can't see how that's possible. I'm doing everything possible. How can I add 100K to my letting agency? It's not possible. And then they see the stories of people that have come and added $250,000 or $1 million, or like Sue Gidney, $5 million. It just seems unbelievable. It seems ridiculous. It just seems like rubbish. But that's exactly what we're doing, is we don't only show people how to add revenue. We actually show them how to add the revenue. But even those two things alone will not make somebody do it. The thing that makes people do it is the community. So we have thousands and thousands of agents that have been through this process. So we will say, well, OK, 175 people have used this letter to increase their fees, and out of that, 1% of your landlords will object. Now, if 99% of your landlords say yes and you increase your fees by 20% and 1% object, are you better off? And here's the thing, the landlords that will object is the landlord that you've got in your mind that you know will object. You know who will object, and you've got him in your mind, and I can tell you now, he will object. but the other 99% won't. And so what the power of the community does, and I'm sure you see this in your business as well, is it gives confidence. And I was actually talking only a couple of days ago at one of our quarterly meetings, and I said, we need to give thanks to the thousands of agents that have been through this before, because it's in their actions and their sharing of the results and their sharing of the successes to you guys in this room that gave you the confidence to make that difference and to make that change, which has now helped you add 100, 160, 200, 250, whatever, to your business as a result of the confidence of the collective. And I think that's the thing. It's like anything. If you're in a room full of people telling you you can't do it, in the end, you'll believe that you can't. If you're in a room of people that telling you you can, and I did, and we did, and it worked, you're more likely to go ahead and do it. So I think it's about finding your community, wherever that is, of people that are taking action, that are growing with a growth mindset. Not put yourself in a room of people, nah, that'll never work. It can't be done. Nah, it's rubbish. You need to get yourself in the right place. And me, I'm in three different masterminds now, one over in the US, two here in the UK, of, you know, people in my business that do what I do, and we collectively share. And if I hear that three people have done that, I'm like, oh, we've got to do that. It's working for them, so therefore it's going to work for me. And so it's the same whatever business you're in. Just get yourself in a community of movers and shakers, and you'll catch it. It breeds.
Yeah. You need to be a sponge, don't you? You've got to let it all in, and you've got to soak it all up, and you've got to give it a go. And I think that is another benefit of kind of outsourcing, because if I think about in our business and what we outsource to, some of our suppliers are so passionate and they know what they're doing and they really believe in their business, and they therefore want to demonstrate to us that it will really help our business. So having that kind of external influence is always really good. But one of the things that I picked up at Agent Rainmaker, and I'm going to ask you in a second, like, how do people get involved? Like, you know, how can they kind of be part of that community? But the key thing that stood out for me more than anything else was the energy, was the passion, was the kind of, you know, and this is meant in a good way, but near enough like the cult mentality, where everybody wanted to be involved and everybody kind of wanted to kind of be on that bus, and they were there. And even at 8:30 in the morning, like, they were dancing and they were totally engaged and supportive of not just everybody in the room, everyone on the stage, everyone. And as we obviously kind of exhibit a whole variety of events in the calendar, and especially last year, 2023, we kind of definitely took the business on the road more than we ever have before. And the one thing that I found different at Agent Rainmaker to some of the other events is that because of what people were learning in the room, they came out and they had a different mindset in terms of how we could help them. And they were very engaged in that conversation. So whatever they had learned or they'd listened to, they really kind of took it on board pretty quickly. So that's the kind of skill in itself. So how important is the passion and the energy and the kind of perseverance in kind of, you know, taking people on that journey? And I guess, does that then just apply to everybody? Like, is there a lesson in that in everybody's day to day, like, business lives, in terms of how we all really need to kind of start thinking about things a little bit differently?
I do believe that the passionate CEO really does work. You think about Richard Branson and Virgin and, you know, Zuckerberg and Facebook, all the companies that have really got an identity, like Steve Jobs and Apple. They've got an attractive, in marketing you call it the attractive character. It doesn't mean you're facially attractive, it just means that people are drawn to you. And I think if you've got a leader that's passionate and focused and driven, it will draw people in. And I think the thing with Agent Rainmaker, when I launched it, it's 5 years now, we've done 5 years of Agent Rainmaker Live, the big conference. And when I first did it in 2018, I said, there's one remit for this. It's got to be motivational, it's got to be inspiring, and it's got to be fun. And so we actually went to America, and we went to so many events in America and said, like, how do they do it over there? Because they're so good at it. You walk in and you're like, wow, this is like a rock concert, it's amazing. And we just brought that back. And that's basically what we did. We sort of recreated that. And you use the cult word. We've been called a cult so many times. Even Sally Phillips, the famous comedian, she goes, where's the high priestess? You know, it's a thing. But I always say, well, you know, if it is a cult, which it isn't, but if it was, it's a cult that makes you money, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good one to be involved if there's worse.
I do definitely think the passion is so important. But remember, what we're talking about is making massive changes to your business, which are uncomfortable, you know, because we all like to do things like we've always done. We're talking about moving people to change their mindset from, no, I've always done it this way, to, no, I'm going to step into the unknown and do this and do that and do the other to grow. And, you know, also we wanted to bring the community together. So we don't want just 300 individuals standing there like statues just watching us. We want to bring the community together, because one of the things you mentioned there and you notice and everybody notices at Adrian Mega Live is that everybody talks to everybody and everybody is willing to share. And quite often you're standing there chatting to someone, having a coffee, thinking they're just a normal delegate, and next thing they're on stage. It's the letting agents that are on the stage. So I think that was the important thing with it, the passion, you know, making sure you've got that community element there, but the motivation and drive as well. And that's what we've tried to put together. So it is very unlike any other event you're going to come across in the UK, because it is different. We know it is. But also as well, Heidi, that scares people off. You know, a lot of people won't come because they're scared that they're going to have to dance, or they're going to have to clap, or they're going to have to whatever. You don't have to do anything. You can stand at the back and do nothing if you want. But it does scare people away, which is a shame. But I don't want to change it. So that's the way it is.
And it's funny, actually, because I was there and we decided as an exec team that some of our exec members hadn't really got out in the industry. Like they were really busy, you know, doing, you know, a brilliant job, I have to say, but they weren't out, they didn't really understand, they didn't feel it. Not like our sales team who were on the road, or our marketing team that had been at loads of events. So I'd asked our finance director and our chief tech officer to come to Agent Rainmaker. And that was kind of quite different, because naturally Phil and Nick are quite introverted and are quite shy, actually. And so there was that. I was there and our head of sales, Elliot, was there. And, you know, we were loving it. Like, literally, we were like, wow. And then Phil and Nick, you could see they were a little bit out of their comfort zone. And we were at the back, because obviously we were kind of a supplier. That was our kind of the right place for us to be. But you could tell that they'd warmed up pretty quickly once they kind of realized that there was kind of no pressure on them. And they really came away taking such a huge amount from it. So if anyone is out there thinking it might not be for them, I can assure you it is, because if Phil and Nick are totally comfortable in that position by the end of day one, then it's definitely for everyone. And the other thing that I noticed is it's in London, and in the evening, often these events, I always find it a little bit awkward, actually. Like, you know, sometimes, like, you know, if you don't want to really go up and not network with people, I don't even like that word, but like talk to people. The difference at this event, that hotel bar and the restaurant was absolutely jammed, and everybody, exactly as you said, was talking with everybody, and it just kind of encouraged them to do it. So it wasn't just about the event, it is very much about kind of the whole community. So how do people become involved? Because obviously we talked about Agent Rainmaker Live, which again will be again in November this year, will it be? Yeah.
It's the 7th and 8th of November.
Okay, great. So it'll be in November again this year. But obviously that's a long way for people to wait. So how do they get involved before that? Like how can they become part of the community?
There's so many different ways. It depends what level you want to get involved. If you want to dip your toe in the water, then probably come along to one of our one-day events. We're always running one-day events. If you go on our website, agentrainmaker.co.uk, you'll see we've got one-day events. And that'll just give you like an overview, like these are the things you can do sort of thing. It's just a bit of a showcase, really, and gives you lots of ideas. Usually motivates people that maybe they should change and take some action. And that's usually a good starting point. That starts from about £97, £197. What people tend to do after that is join one of our residential events. We do 4 days and we do 3-day events. One's focused on marketing, one's focused on business growth and revenue generation. We call that the boot camp, which is our sort of central product, really. Everybody who you see the success stories of that we ever talk about have all been through boot camp, because boot camp is where we build the business plan and we take you from a £300,000 business to a £2 million business, or £2 million to a £10 million. We've had £17 million turnover businesses in that room. So it doesn't matter where you're at, it's about generating more revenue and growing your business, and it's so fun and so exciting. Or then if you really like it and you love what you see at boot camp, the next step would be we do a 12-month mastermind, which is, you know, where we work with you and help you to put all this stuff in play. So most people start off at a 1 day or start up a boot camp and work their way from that. We do 2 annual conferences, Agent Mega Live, which is 7th and 8th of November this year in Heathrow. We also have a virtual one, which is in May, which is the 9th and 10th of May as well. So that's a virtual one you can attend, which is free to attend. So again, another showcase event. Come and have a look, see what it's all about. Love it, hate it, whatever. It doesn't matter. It doesn't cost you anything. You've got to turn your Zoom on. So there's loads of different ways to get engaged.
Okay, fabulous. Agent Rainmaker, as you said, like you've had 5 events now, like the big ones every year. What's next? What's the kind of next challenge or the milestone that you're hoping to achieve with it?
Well, at the moment, the world is changing. I see Agent Rainmaker, and I always have since we started it, that when I launched it in 2017, I remember saying to the community then that the answers to growth is not inside the community, because if the answer was already in the community, we'd already be doing it. The answer to growth is outside. We've got to look at other industries, and this is what we've done all the way through. We've looked at how the tech companies are growing and how the retail industries are growing, and what are they doing that we could try and apply. So I see Agent Rainmaker as an R&D company. Our job is to research what they're doing in America, what they're doing in Australia, what they're doing in New Zealand, what they're doing in Europe, and say, well, how can we do that? You look at America, real estate is the top five in the top five most profitable industries in America. In the UK, we're 97th. What are we doing wrong? Our profit, the average profit margin for letting agents in the UK, according to the Plimsoll report, is 11.9%. It's horrendous. And so the answer's got to be by looking outside. And I'm on a personal mission to get the lettings industry to 50% profitability. That's my mission. That's what I've been working on now since 2018. We have had hundreds of letting agents get to 30 to 40% profitability. We've had over a dozen now get to 50% and some to 60% profitability. So we know it can be done. We know the model. We've just got to get more people on board. And so for me, that's my personal mission. And that's got to come from researching the highest profitability businesses in the world and saying, how are they doing that? And Heidi, it's down to outsourcing. It's down to focusing on your key thing. It's about to being passionate and awesome at what you do, but letting other people that are awesome at other stuff, whether that's people, tech or companies or whatever, let them do that. And if you pull all that together, you have an amazing business. My letting agency branches now, they're just sales machines. They just literally find landlords, find tenants, put the two together. They find buyers, they find vendors, they put the two together. Everything else is done elsewhere, absolutely everything. And that's the key.
And I think, you know, for us, like I mentioned, we started out as a referencing business. It's evolved a lot over time, but I know how much goes into a referencing check to do it properly and to do it really well and to use all the right balance of people, process, data and technology. And I know a letting agent on their own might have gut instinct and they might have market knowledge and they might remember that tenant of old. We know that it's not equal to at all what we could provide them for very little, actually, in when we kind of look at that product line. So I'm a massive advocate of it. And actually, by actually talking to our kind of customers or potential customers about the things that we can do for them, it has absolutely made me look at our business in the same way and say, well, if we're preaching that, we've also got to, you know, walk the walk. So I've definitely learned that. So thank you so much, Sally. That is such an amazing session. And it's just a reminder for me again of all the things that I learned back in November. Before you go, our regular listeners of Let's Talk Let's will know that we always ask every guest if they have a funny story or anecdote that they would like to share.
Okay, well, what I'd like to share is I've got a co-director called Dawn Bennett. She's been with me for, I always get this wrong and I get told off. She tells me off a lot, actually, 16 or 17 years. And it was a story about one day I found her on the tools. Now, she's a very highly paid member of staff and she was managing my whole management department and escalations team and everything. And it's one day I walked into the management. There she was on the tools doing gas certs and actions and all that sort of stuff. And I said, what are you doing? She says, well, I'll just say Mary didn't turn up today, so I've had to step in. I said, that's not your job. You need to get someone else to do that because you're not doing your thing. Oh, well, this has got to be done. If I don't do it, who else is going to do it? Hey, what would you want me to do? Just to leave it. And the whole rant came. Dawn rants a lot. And then so do I. So we both rant. And I was just like, ah, anyway, next day came along on the tools again. I said, you know, anyway, she wasn't listening. Anyway, fast forward a few weeks later, I found her doing exactly the same again. This time, let's say Fred was off. I can't remember who it was. Someone was off. And there she was again. I said, Dawn, you've got to let go of these getting off the tools. I said, these are £10 an hour tasks. You are a hugely paid member of staff. This is not good sense. Why you're not doing that? You're not doing the contract audits. You're not doing the HMO audits. You're not doing the license audits. You're not overseeing the staff. You're not actually hiring another member of staff to replace the one that's just left. Ranting ensued. Anyway, I got really frustrated with this. So a few weeks later, I thought, right, I've got to stop this now. There she was again on the tools, covering for somebody else. And, you know, she hadn't hired someone to replace this person. So she was now actually becoming part of the problem because she needed to hire someone, but she wasn't doing that because she was too busy doing the actions, which she was ranting at. And I was just like, ah. So I says, right. I went into and I said, Dawn, this is how it's going to be. I said, I've tried to ask you politely. I said, you're doing £10 an hour tasks. I says, from now on, this system tracks how many hours you're on there doing those actions. From now on, I'm going to pay you £10 an hour for every hour you sit at that desk and work on those actions. And she literally stopped typing, looked at me. If you know Dawn, you can see the look in your mind. Looked at me and said, you can't do that. And I went, watch me.
Anyway. It's actually making me think of my own, the things I do though, and my team are probably going, yep, that is you, Heidi, you do that. And it is just such an invaluable lesson, because a comfortable place is to drop back, isn't it? And also, because we've potentially done that role or done that thing in the past, we just think we can do it again, and actually time's moved on in that time as well. So thank you so much, Sally. For our listeners, to ensure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. Please leave us a review if you like what you hear, or if you have an idea about what you would like to hear. And thank you very much for listening.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.